morning.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. The primary question presented is whether the government's interpretation of Section 110 of Title 32 is acceptable. It is not, for two reasons. First, the government's interpretation is contrary to the plain meaning of the word govern, which determines the nature of the president's authority under the statute. Second, the government's interpretation frustrates achievement of the fundamental purpose of the laws establishing the National Guard, which is to ensure the ready availability of a federally trained reserve force for federal service. The statute expressly says that the president has authority both to prescribe regulations and to issue orders to govern the Guard. Yet the government maintains that this does not include authority to issue an order requiring the Guard to correct its violations of valid federal regulations. Instead,
it interprets that language to say govern by way of regulations that apply across the board as distinct from individual management of who's in the National Guard and who isn't.
Yes, their contention is that prescribed regulations and issue orders means really the same thing, and all it means is prescribed regulations. That's contrary to a fundamental principle of statutory construction.
I'm still on the word govern. That's your...
Yes, it's the plain meaning of the word govern is more than establish criteria in an effort to control the Guard, which is the government's interpretation.
You say that, but I mean, the argument here is you're dealing with sovereign states who are organizing these guards, subject to federal guidance.
Let's look at the Constitution. The Constitution confers upon Congress the authority to provide for governing the Guard, and then Congress enacted this statute, which transferred the authority to the president to issue orders and prescribe regulations to govern the Guard.
Well,
you're arguing that the statute pushes federal power absolutely as far as it could go under the Constitution, are you?
I'm saying... Well, I think that's the natural way to interpret it, yes. I don't have to go that far to prevail in this case, but I think that would be a natural interpretation since the Constitution and the statute use the same operative term, govern, and that similarity suggests that Congress did intend to confer upon the president the full authority that Congress has to provide for governing the Guard. It certainly does suggest that. But the government's burden is to show that... it's plausible to interpret this statute in a way that precludes the authority to issue an order to require compliance with a valid federal regulation. And the reason why, the second reason, apart from the language of the statute that suggests that that should not be, that interpretation is unacceptable, is that it frustrates the accomplishment of the purpose. This is a situation where the government has a very substantial interest in ensuring that Guard members are not improperly separated from the Guard in violation of federal regulations, because that deprives the president of the availability of their service.
It also has an interest in preserving the notion that these are actually state outfits.
The purpose of this statute and of the Guard statutes is to ensure the availability of this force for ready federal service.
And the government has interpreted it differently than you have. The government has said that accomplishing that purpose is best achieved with generic regulations and leaving the specifics up to the state. The government thinks that's the best way to ensure the availability of the National Guard.
Well, they have said that. Well, but it's not correct to say that this is not a case where the government has said, gosh, we think the only necessary orders and regulations to govern the Guard are the following. That's not what they've said. In this case, we have, in fact, a situation where the Correction Board has said what justice requires in this case is that these individual plaintiffs be reinstated, but we lack authority. We're not saying we think it's unnecessary. We lack authority. The question here is whether or not it is true that under this statute, the president lacks authority to issue an order requiring the Guard to correct its violations of federal regulations. if the president had made a determination that, in his view, he does not think it necessary to do that in order to govern the Guard, I don't think we wouldn't be here, although there would be a clash between that determination and the thorough and fitting relief requirement under the Correction Board statute. But that would be a different question. There would be a clash there. But that is not this case.
What about here, the fact that they are part of the reserve?
That is, they are part of the reserve, that's their federal status as
in
part
other
of
words,
the reserve.
In other words, they remain available to the president.
That's part of the contradiction that is in the Penegara-Cano case. What is said there is simply not true. When these folks are separated from the National Guard, they are no longer members of the National Guard of the United States, and they are not available to the president.
What does it mean then when they're in the reserve?
Well, there is the Army or Air Force Reserve is entirely separate reserve force. It's
an
entirely federal force.
And the president can call on them.
Yes, but the separated plaintiffs are not a member of that. When they're not members of the Army Reserve unless they choose to adopt that status, and some of them did, Your Honor. That's correct. But the point is, when they were separated,
I'm trying to understand the nature of the federal relief that was granted, at least to three of the four plaintiffs.
I'm sorry, I don't understand that the question. The federal leave.
The federal relief.
Oh, the federal relief.
That was granted.
Oh, I see. What the Correction Board did was offer the plaintiffs in statement in the Army Reserve, which is a separate entity from the Army Guard of the United States, which they were necessarily eliminated from when Puerto Rico threw them out of the Guard.
So
and
the
they were offered had- that. And they and some of them said yes, I'd like that. But
and,
the point
why,
is,
yeah, go ahead.
But the point is, if they had simply said no, the president would have been deprived of their services. Now they're very patriotic, and they said yes, I'm willing to serve. I'm willing to sign up, even though I've lost my job. I'm willing to be a member of the Army Reserve.
Well,
yes, I accept the offer.
Paid.
They did that.
They're
Pardon
paid.
Me. Well, for their reserve. For the reserve training, yes, it's a small amount. But the point is, the legal question is that if the president does not have authority to order reinstatement of unlawfully separated Guard members, the president is deprived of the availability of their service unless they gratuitously agree to join another. They can always enlist in the regular Army. Sure, they can. But
so it's unreasonable to take the view that if a state Guard violates federal regulations and thereby, under your argument, deprives the president of his ability to have a readily trained force that he may need, that the only way the president can do that, consistent with the word govern, is to order the state, as distinct from what the government is arguing here, that the president has the remedy of withdrawing all the money for the state guard.
No, my argument doesn't go that far. I'm not saying that's the only remedy that the president could adopt.
No, but I'm saying the president is arguing that is a remedy, that this combination of remedies is adequate to meet the president's need for assurance.
That is not the government's argument.
All right.
If that were the government's argument, I don't think that would be a determination by the president or the government that it's not necessary to do this. What we have is a situation where the government, acting through the Correction Board, said, well, it is necessary to reinstate them in order to do them justice, but we lack the authority to do so. And that is the question presented. Mm-hmm. And that is the only question that's presented under the statute.
So you think
the assertion of lack of authority.
You think the government's brief is to be read that even though it may undermine the president's authority?
Indeed, that's exactly how it reads.
All right.
It's entirely unreasonable to interpret the statute that way. It's inconsistent with, undermines the purpose, and it's inconsistent with the language.
On your theory, if I understand it, it follows from the nature of the statute that in any case where the government has adopted a regulation, it must, presumably, for some purpose relating to the use of these units, right? It must follow through by review and mandatory rejection of any state violation.
No, that was Judge Rogers' question, I believe, because that would be a... No, I'm not saying that the president has to say we have to have the following remedies for every violation of our regulation. The president could make a determination that says, gosh, I don't really think it's necessary to issue orders, reinstatement orders, in order to properly govern the Guard. I don't think so. That is not the question. If the president or some authority had said that, as I say, this would be a very different case, and it would only be a conflict with the third and fifth. It's an authority. There are certain
want of reasoned explanation case.
Yes, there's a lack of any reasonable basis for the government to say that it lacks authority to do what the government itself said should be done. That's what this case presents. Right. If I may, I'll reserve the remainder
All right.
of my time
Thank
for
you.
Rebuttal.
Counsel for appellees.
May it please the court, Catherine Donnelly for appellees. On the contrary to appellant's position, this would not undermine the government's ability to maintain a ready reserve. In fact, adopting appellant's position would be a sea change in the way that the state and the federal government relate in relation to the militias.
Now, his argument is the federal government puts out a regulation that says people are to remain in the Guard, and if you want to expel them, you have to follow the following four steps. And if you don't follow the four steps, then they have been unlawfully discharged. And why would you issue a regulation that puts up these requirements if it wasn't somehow related to having the ability of the president to have access to a trained and ready guard? I mean, suppose the state just was arbitrary and capricious about it.
Your Honor, in this case, they did follow their own regulation, the Puerto Rico regulation.
Not the federal.
However, they did not follow the federal regulation. In the relationship between the federal government and the state militias, the Secretary of the Army has carved out exceptions, and the Supreme Court has held there are things that the courts do not look at, such as the training and the discipline of the militia. We'd argue that this is one of those things, the personnel, the makeup, the composition of the militia.
What about discharge here?
Your Honor, the remedy would be to reinstate the appellants, which would be a personnel decision that has historically been the purview of the militia. The statute, 32 section 110, states that the president has the authority to give those orders necessary to govern the militia. Obviously, that implies there are things that are not necessary for the president to order in effectively governing the militia.
Now, counsel says you haven't made that argument.
Your Honor, I'm making it now, but I believe our brief also makes it.
Where in your brief do you make that argument?
That the statute is ambiguous and there are some orders that are not necessary? Your Honor?
That compliance with this federal regulation is not necessary to carry out the purpose of the National Guard from the president's perspective.
Your Honor, maybe it's a structural argument then that the federal government, and in order to work with the militia, has traditionally, historically recognized that there are areas that the Secretary of the Army does not control as far as the state militias, and reinstatement of personnel in the state militia is one of those areas. The Secretary of the Army is the one who interprets 32 USC 110, and he has consistently interpreted it not to give him the power to reinstate people in the state militias.
And the question is that a reasonable interpretation, even giving all the Crete's deference that we must give?
Yes, Your Honor. The ABCMR had before them a legal opinion from the National Guard Bureau when they made these decisions. They followed circuit court rulings in several circuits, not this one. The appellants have acknowledged that the ABCMR has historically issued recommendations to the militias. In this case, in fact, one of the appellants requested the AG of Puerto Rico reinstate him in accordance with the ABCMR. And the AG said, no, thank you, I'm not required to follow the guidance of the ABCMR.
So pushing that argument to its extreme, which is where you have to go with this, don't you?
Your Honor, it's a similar case to the Gilligan case in the Supreme Court, where the court recognized that...
That case is not on point. That's the Kent State?
Yes, yeah. Your Honor. As far as the idea that there are certain areas that are not, that are military decisions, that are not the purview of the court. In this case, this is a review of the, under the Administrative Procedure Act, a review, as you were saying, of whether the board was arbitrary and capricious. The board is entitled or is required to interpret its statute, 1552, and they read the statute to say that the board may correct, the Secretary of the Army may correct.
So the statute says, have the power to govern, and the Army has decided through the, what is it, the National Guard Bureau to promulgate this regulation?
Correct.
And the regulation is hortatory?
I'm sorry, the regulation is?
It's not mandatory?
Your Honor, actually it is mandatory. However, the only ability that the federal government has to enforce it is under Section 108
because
to withdraw funds.
They've chosen to interpret it that way.
Your Honor, whether they've chosen it, it's their responsibility.
But I mean, the argument is they have interpreted that. That's your whole argument. They've interpreted it this way for years. Some courts have agreed. And that's the end of the argument, basically.
Well, that it is reasonable to interpret it that way, Your Honor, that the nature set up by the Constitution does talk about a dual nature, a federal versus a state, whereas the militias are called up under the service of the United States at times, but it clearly reserves to them the training and discipline and appointment of some of its members.
So all this federal money that's going out to the state guards and all these regulations that are going out, and the governors just say, thank you very much, but you know, we have our own rules and we'll follow them, and we really don't care what the National Guard Bureau says. And the president says, fine, we'll stop giving you all this money.
Well, Your Honor, I'm going to maybe go outside the record here, but in other cases when the ABCMR does issue these recommendations, they are frequently followed by the states.
Oh, I'm sure, but this case they didn't.
Yes, Your Honor.
But you see where his argument is leading. I mean, you have all the state guards going their merry way. The president will say, well, hold back all the money.
Well, in other situations...
So he has this ragtag group of people to call upon, maybe.
Well, in an extreme hypothetical...
Well, I'm taking you that far.
Yes, Your Honor, but in this case,
the Army might change its view if that were the situation? As to what's a reasonable interpretation of the statute?
Your Honor, I think they'd have a few road bumps in changing that interpretation, notably the elected representatives of the states. And if they would, Your Honor, those the elected representatives would still be there, and I believe they and have historically objected to those types of changes in the scope of power that the federal government has over the states. In summary, this review by the ABCMR of whether they were arbitrary and capricious is entitled to greater deference under the Christ standard. The board did follow other circuit opinions. They received an advisory opinion from the National Guard Bureau. Accepting appellant's interpretation of this statute would be a sea change and would go in conflict with the historic interpretation by the Secretary of the Army as to what he can order militia to do. And we ask that you affirm, unless you have any further questions.
Thank you. Mr. Schimber, counsel for appellants.
Counsel, you said in answer to my question that you are making a, quote, reasoned decision-making argument, that is to say, an attack on the decision for want of reasoned decision-making. But looking at your brief, I did not see such an argument.
I misspoke. I did not. I should not have answered
your
question
that way.
You are not making
it. Your argument.
I'm talking about what I'm saying is that I'm not challenging the decision of the correction board as an exercise of judgment. No, what we're dealing with here is a situation where the government has made an unreasonable interpretation of the statute.
Which
the board has then followed.
The interpretation that the board was following cannot survive Chevron deference.
That's correct, Your Honor. It's contrary to the plain meaning. Ms. Donnelly has confirmed what question is presented here. She said that the Secretary consistently has interpreted this statute as not giving him the power to order reinstatement. This is not a determination by the Secretary in his or her judgment that I don't think it's necessary to reinstate people in order to govern the Guard. The court should tell the Secretary, you do have authority to order reinstatement if you do think it is necessary, and you have, of course, discretion to determine whether it is necessary, but you do have the power, and your prior determination, your consistent prior determination that says, I lack all authority to ever order reinstatement in the Guard is wrong under the statute because it's contrary to the plain meaning. It is a dangerous interpretation that undermines the achievement of the statutes because it puts the federal government in a situation where the only thing it can do when members are unlawfully separated is to cut off funding, thereby depriving the government of even more soldiers for whose training it has paid for.
Can it cut off funding selectively?
Yeah. I believe it could, Your Honor. But the question is whether or not a selective cutoff of funds, such as, we'll cut off the pay, the money that should go to the pay of these plaintiffs, and we'll give them that money when that kind of thing.
That wouldn't cut much ice because the National Guard has already saved that pay. Right.
I don't know how we can.
Whatever. But the point is.
I don't know how we can second guess the president's judgment that the fund termination is the most effective. I mean,
we don't have a situation here, Your Honor, where that is.
No, but that's his judgment. His judgment is that that's the most effective way to run this system. And we have lots of funding statutes throughout the U.S. Code that are structured just that way.
If that were the judgment, it would be the different question presented. What we have is the federal government saying is that the only legal option available to us is this cutoff of funds. We do not have power to order reinstatement. And what the court should say is, you have the power, you should make the choice whether it is necessary, because that is your prerogative. But you do have the power. Your consistent interpretation that you don't have the power is wrong. It's contrary to the plain language of this statute. And if you don't, and you will need this power if there is extreme circumstances such as those that Judge Rogers has alluded to. This is a situation where the government's interpretation of the statute could result in a guard avoiding a presidential call-up order simply by summarily discharging all the members and transforming them into a state militia after the federal government has paid for their training. And we mentioned that in our opening brief, and there is no response to that in the government's brief.
Wouldn't that trigger exactly the kind of generic control the president says he has the authority to implement? In other words, if that ever happens, he has the authority to deal with it. Because that's what he means by governing.
The government's position is that the president would not have authority to order reinstatement of all of those
presumably he'd have authority under the statute to direct the guard to do it.
Right, he would not. That's their position. That the president would not have that authority.
No. He would have the authority to direct the guard. He would issue an order governing the guard, directing the guard to reinstate them all. Because it's
the government's position is that the president lacks that authority.
In an individual case.
Well, the lack of authority to order reinstatement of one implies lack of authority to reinstate two.
Why?
And they have not argued otherwise.
If his objective is to govern the guard, to set general standards for the guard, you could have orders that are not permitted with respect to one that might be permitted with respect to all members of the guard.
That is true. If the president were to make it, or anyone in authority were to make a determination that, well, look, it's only necessary to issue reinstatement orders if we're dealing with a wholesale discharge. It's not necessary to reissue reinstatement orders in case of one or two. If that were the case, this would be a very different case, and I'd probably lose it for sure. But that is not the case. The question presented is whether the government is correct when it says it totally lacks any authority to order anyone reinstated in the Guard. That is the government's position. That is what Ms. Donnelly said that the government's interpretation of the statute is. It is incorrect. The court should tell them otherwise.
Thank you. We will take the case under advisement.
Stand, please. This honorable court has
And for the record, we want to thank all court staff for assisting us in being able to have this oral argument today, and counsel.
Law clerks, if you wouldn't mind shutting down your computers completely and just closing the lid, that'd be most appreciated. Thank you. Yes. Yeah, you can turn off all the lights, and that's it. There's a light switch on your left-hand side, just past those two doors. And then there's a light switch by the front door coming into the attorney's lounge. Thank you very much.